everybody. We're back. I'm Tom.
I'm Travis.
And this is another episode of Give Us the Launch Codes. We're having a good day today. It's been nice. It's been actually a nice overall day for this beautiful recording. Speaking of beautiful things, Travis, did you see that hockey game recently over the past weekend against a hockey game against Canada and the U.S.?
I did not watch that game. I was unfortunately on a date night with Denise. I did see some clips online. I guess so this is the Four Nations face-off.
Yep.
Which I guess this is what the NHL is doing instead of the All-Star game this year. I think that's kind of brilliant. I think that's like, I mean, I don't know, that maybe that's another reason why this is brilliant. Making it about national pride instead of...
Oh, it became about national pride.
Yeah, instead about, like, what conference you're in, which no one cares about, like, East-West, American versus national. No one cares about that. So, like, Canada versus America. I guess they're doing this in Canada.
Oh, the one for Canada against the U.S. was in Canada. And it got crazy right off the bat. Do you want to know how it started off, even before the clock went?
Before we continue with that, I just want to note, because this episode is probably getting released 2 weeks after we record this, we're talking about the first America-Canada hockey game. The final, the face-off final, that's also between America and Canada, at time of recording, is happening tomorrow, so we
the
haven't
20th.
Watched that. So
yeah,
we're talking about the first one.
Game 2 is the 20th. We're talking about this past weekend.
Yeah, which happened like 3 days ago for us.
So what happened was during the national anthem for our country, we got booed hard. Hard boo. And basically, the U.S. teams just said, oh, okay, throat or your butt, because my dick's going somewhere, you get to choose. That's how they played, because in the first 9 seconds, there were 3 fucking fights.
Which is the real reason why you watch hockey.
And then after that, it was basically lights out, boot in your ass hockey, and the U.S. won 3-2. But here's the best part.
3-1, I think.
No, 3-2.
It was
3-2, if I remember.
I thought we beat them harder.
Oh, no, we just beat the fuck out of them harder. Not score-wise, because when we were playing, this is the best part. So, in hockey, for those who don't watch it, normally you just, a little roughing, you get pushed up against the wall, the plastic glass wall. Nope, they were chucking the Canadians into the wall. We were using our hockey sticks to clip their skates. We were just going toe-to-toe. To describe this game in such a beautiful way, as the YouTube comments are so fun to read once in a while, I went to see a fight and a hockey game broke out. Here's another one that was great for me. 25% tariffs on knuckle sandwiches, motherfuckers. 90s hockey is back, and that is basically what it was. It was just brutal, not even fast-paced. It was just physical, crushing skulls, putting your ass on the ground hockey. And this is what happens when you, first of all, don't boo the national anthem. But you know what, Canada? Please keep booing our national anthem, because it's a great way to win a game.
Does that happen every time an NHL game is like with an American opponent takes place in Canada?
No. If you remember 3 years ago, the Canadians... So 3 years ago, there was a hockey game. I don't remember who the U.S. was playing, or even if it was in the NHL league. But there was a Canada and U.S. game in Canada, and the national anthem for our country was being sung. The mic and the audio got cut off. The Canadians finished it for us in unison. They sang it for us.
Oh, that's really nice of
them. That was 3 years ago. Now they booed it, and we put, you know, basically the stick up their ass. So please, to the rest of the world, I say this. Please boo our national anthem every fucking game you play us in, whatever sport it is. Olympics are coming up. Please boo us, because we're just going to fuck you in the ass.
Yeah.
We're going to win. So please, give us fire.
Did any of those YouTube comments say that game was just a dramatization of Kendrick's halftime show?
No, but they basically just said 90s hockey is back. Honestly, when you said dramatization, when I was watching that game, I'm like this. Oh, what sports movies are like. This was a sports movie, a legit sports movie that happened in real life where two brothers on the U.S. got into the penalty box together, and then the fact that three fights broke up in 9 seconds, as one commentator said, an actual hockey commentator was like this, wow, this is some great hockey I'm watching. Sir, no hockey even happened. This was like minor league shit where they were just like breaking noses and jaws and picking each other up and just throwing each other into the wall.
You said 90s hockey. I my knowledge of hockey history is lacking. Was hockey more violent in the 90s?
Oh, yes. But hockey had some bite to it. Now, you know, speaking of that, as people have been saying recently, American sports have gotten soft the way the NBA, the NFL, baseball, all the things that have been happening have been softening up our sports. But
I don't know what you're talking about with baseball.
I hate that fucking counter on the pitcher's thing. That's just me.
Okay, that does.
Just, I mean, like, the overall, like, that by softening, sucks, yeah. It's more of like the overall taking away what the game used to be before the turn of the century. This is what hockey is still hockey. Hockey's still basically like, yep, nothing's going to happen. We're still going to play random fights on the ice. The fights were so intense at times, when the refs went to break it up, they jumped on the players and fucking had them in a hole like this. Get off of them. You're done. Not like, okay, guys, we're done here. Hello. No, it was like this. Tap out, motherfucker. So that was fun to watch.
I don't think anyone would have gotten my joke about, like, I don't see how hot baseball is soft. The joke is that I'm a Los Angeles Dodgers fan that's still giddy about winning our second World Series championship in 5 years. And I'm eagerly excited about this upcoming season to defend the title. Anyway, I've had this thought for a while. That I think it was prompted by a Facebook meme I saw. Like, if you were the NFL commissioner, so football, if you were the NFL commissioner, what would you do? And there's like a lot of serious things I would do, but one of those not serious things would be I would have football fights. I would have hockey style fights in football. Like, if there's like some roughness happening, or because sometimes you see fights happen in football.
Oh, the roughing of the passer, getting a little physical.
Yeah, after or the like whistle. Someone, the receiver steps out of bounds, but someone pushes him anyway.
Pushing, yep.
Unnecessary roughness. And sometimes you see guys go at it, and I just had this thought of like, no. We should have a proper fight. You know, pads off, helmets off. You just see like shirtless dudes. Even in like 30 degree weather, just duking it out on the field, and like that could be an option to avoid a penalty. Like, if you continue with the fight, the refs will stand back and just wait till someone gets on top of the other, and then no penalty, like the penalty will be declined afterwards, and then the play will just keep going as normal.
Do you want to know why that wouldn't work? Do you want to know why that wouldn't work for a
football? Oh, I can't imagine why that wouldn't work.
Oh, I could give you one good example, because you don't want to risk an O-lineman beating the shit out of a wide receiver. Because them boys are corn-fed big, and an O-lineman will just wreck. That's why. You don't want to risk an O-lineman fucking up a dude who's like 4'9".
Well, the two would have to consent to the fight.
There's no consenting in fights. In hockey, they don't consent. They just take off their gloves and fuck each other up. No. Yeah, no, an O-lineman would basically just sit on... There'd be death on the field.
I mean, sometimes a wide receiver would egg on a fight because it'd be like, you know, hey, dude, what the fuck was that? That's usually how that starts.
Yeah. And then the left tackle eats him. The left tackle eats him.
Because I was thinking about this is like hockey, you know, football, there's all this concern and talk with tackle football, how safe it is, you know. Hey, we should have these optional guardian's caps that make your helmet look stupid to protect yourself. But it's optional, so you can wear it or not, of which I always think the one guy that does wear it kind of looks like a pussy compared to everyone else.
Yeah,
CTE, oh no. But then hockey, like hockey fights are allowed. People can just fight.
Oh, yeah.
And they slam each other into walls, and it's, like, way more consistently violent than football is.
Dude, hockey fights are so violent sometimes that they even punch their own selves. And what's happened in the last game, he punched himself square in the face, and his head literally whiplashed back, and he was still throwing punches while he punched himself and the guy. That was beautiful. So, that's what was a fun thing. Now, let's get into the meat of this episode. But before we do, Travis... My God, once again, we have another fucking sponsor. Can you believe that? We have a brand new sponsor again.
I'm waiting for the money to come in from these sponsors. I don't see them yet.
The sponsor for this episode today, and man, I'm so happy to... This shows us that we're on top of the world right now with this sponsor. Our sponsor for today, folks, is cheese.
Cheese.
Just good old cheese.
Very addictive.
Oh, God. You can shred it. You can make it into a block. You can slice it, melt it, freeze it, have it cold, have it room temperature. Put it on something hot. It's just cheese. It's great. It's as good as a snack. It's good in a quesadilla. It's good on some nachos. Hell, it's even great on a steak. Yeah, I said it. Nothing wrong with cheese on meat. It's just amazing. So cheese, folks. You got your Havarti. You got your Gouda. You got your Colby. You got your Wensleydale, Stilton, mild cheddar, medium cheddar, sharp cheddar, extra sharp cheddar.
Uh-huh.
Cheese, folks. Parmesan. Swiss. Not usually a fan of Swiss, but still Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
Cheese. That's the sponsor for today. Get some cheese, folks. Even if you're lactose intolerant, guess what? We all love cheese.
Word of advice, if you're going to have like shredded cheese on everything, on anything, well, sometimes some people, including myself, put them on everything. But if you're going to have shredded cheese, do yourself a favor and just buy a block. Don't buy the pre-shredded. It won't be as good. It won't melt properly.
No, it actually doesn't. You're right.
Yeah. No. Buy the block and shred it.
Do the labor.
Do the labor of shredding it yourself. It may hurt. Your arm might get sore, but it is worth it. It will settle on your food a lot better.
Cheese is great, folks. It's great. Just all cheese. All cheese is awesome. We love it. And we are very proud to, and honored to have cheese be our sponsor today. So, cheese, everybody. Alrighty, so let's get into the episode today. We're going to have a little fun because we did get a little squirrely in the last episode.
We're not going to do some doomer talk about how terrible the world and the government is. We're not going to do that anymore.
No, we're going to have a little fun today. We're going to talk about TV dads.
Oh.
See, we all grew up watching TV, especially me and Travis here, and we've noticed our TV dads that we grew up on are pretty different from the TV dads of our fathers. Very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to just basically shoot the shit about TV dads. So I'm going to start off with one TV dad that we all know and love, Red Foreman, from That 70s Show. His classic motto, I'm going to put my foot in your ass. But yeah, Korean War veteran for the Navy. Red Foreman, everybody, the stereotypical 70s dad who basically put his foot in your ass and did not like your friends at all. Just a very salt of the earth, salty motherfucker. Did not like any one of Eric's friends and just loved the government. He whatever the government says, you do, god damn it.
There's a common trope, at least I don't even know if it's a trope or if it's just a part of human existence, but you see it's a lot in fiction, like people having problems with their parents. I remember my dad bringing this to my attention because we were watching an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. Well, not a great episode. If you know your Star Trek, it's the one where Riker's dad comes to visit the Enterprise and they have problems with a capital P, and I don't really know what it was. I don't even know what the problem was. If it was just like, why were you not as nice to me after mommy died or something?
Oh, that was that kind of thing?
I think so, if I remember it correctly. It's not an episode I rewatch very often. It's the one where Riker and his dad are in these like mech'd out, coated Asian fighting suits, and they're doing some future martial art.
Okay.
Some future Asian martial art, and there's like a thing. I guess Riker's dad trained him when he was, whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's a dumb episode. But my dad said to me, what is it with TV having problems with their dads? What is it with TV writer? And I guess, we joked that maybe it's just that so many TV writers had their dads tell them, do not get a degree in writing. You won't be able to get a real job.
Don't put foot on the table.
And so, this is the successful TV writer now working on television, getting back at their dad and all of that. But, I'm sure you have several examples of bad TV dads. I decided to do the research and look up good TV dads as well.
The bad ones are funnier in sitcoms, if you think about it.
Well, in sitcoms, yeah. But, like, everybody is, like, at each other's throats in sitcoms. And then there's like bad dads and like dramas. See, you mentioned sitcom, and there's so many like actual sitcom examples, but the first one I thought of is Logan Roy from Succession. Which, and I think it's just because Succession is written, a lot of how Succession is written is like that of a sitcom, even though it's technically a drama, but its characters are kind of written like sitcom characters, which goes to the overall point of how pathetic they are. But Logan Roy is such a bastard.
I remember I watched the first season, and that was one piece of shit dad, just overall, with just his children, the way he purposely pit them against each other. Mm-hmm. And the way he would even treat the youngest, the oldest, and
he's wow. Like the embodiment. Someone pointed out that like he's essentially a metaphor for capitalism in and of itself, and which is fair. But you know, that character makes more sense when you. Well, no, he makes sense from the get-go, but something that I found illuminating was that Jesse Armstrong, the creator of the show, was inspired in part by not just Rupert Murdoch, but also by Sumner Redstone, like Viacom, CBS,
Paramount. When creating the character?
Yeah, because Sumner Redstone, he's no longer alive. Sherry Redstone was like the chairwoman of Paramount for a bit. And I don't know if she's still involved anymore. I think she kind of sold out after sold her stake after the Skydance merger. But whatever. Sumner Redstone had a quote when he was being interviewed. Someone asked, like, you know, what are your plans of succession after you die or whatever? And he says, I don't plan on dying. I plan on living forever. So it's just sort of the ego of being that wealthy causes you to not account for your own death. You're like, fuck it, I'm going to go on as long as I can and, you know, screw whoever comes after me. I mean, it ended up being his daughter, but I mean, but that's essentially what Succession was about. This dad, this guy, you know, the dad is running the business, but he's very old and he's going to die soon. And he has no plans on how the company is going to continue without him. And he probably should, because there's aspects of his company that need modernizing. And he is not prepared to make any of those choices. It's really, really great show.
And if I remember right, too, as like one of his sons said, like, if anything happens to him, like, the world economy will take a bit of a hit.
Yes.
Like, it's that, like, he's so arrogant and egotistical, he doesn't realize, like, no, you need a successor. Because if some new company has no choice but to continue because the world's counting on it to a degree. Okay, here's a TV dad that's bad. We'll do some good ones soon, but the bad ones are just fun. Al Bundy. From Married with Children.
That's a sitcom I actually haven't seen.
I've seen bits of it. I know a lot of people like it, and I think Ed O'Neill, that's the actor, right, Ed O'Neill?
Yeah.
I think he's a great actor.
I know him from Modern Family.
Yeah, he's a great actor. It's just,
and God. Katie Sagal was his wife,
yes,
right?
And she's a goddess. That's all you need to know.
Insert Sons of Anarchy reference here.
Boom, boom, boom. What a just dumb show, but what a stupid fucking dad. Oh my God, and I know that was the point of the show. It was a different take on a TV dad. But I was like, my God, and I knew dads like this from elementary school, middle school, and high school, from classmates and friends I'd interact with. Just what a dumbass. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, quoting, yeah, Red Foreman, just a dumbass. And that's one person who should not have been allowed to breed. That's how just, just dumb he came off of. Like, basically, the way the character was described is, Ed O'Neill has described it before in some interviews, the whole point of that character, as he saw it, was his uncle. And apparently his uncle was like this. He was so defeated by life that when he would come home and his wife would say, hey, honey, by the way, dinner's on the table, by the way. He would come home and be like, hey, honey, just want to let you know the dog died. And the response would be, so what's for dinner? Like, he just accepted defeat. Just, oh, okay, world's against me. Oh, well, what's for food? Just, yeah. So just a dumb dad. That dumb show, dumb dad, and horrible father overall. God, it's like, dude, you need to help out your kids because your daughter's such a whore, and not in the fun way. Just a dumb whore. His kid was an idiot, too. I'll give a good dad. One good dad for sure, just to change it up, obviously. You know what? You can't go wrong with Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That's a good dad because his whole thing was, he already had a son. He was in the show, he was Will Smith's character's uncle. He had a son. Uncle Phil had a son, Philip Banks. He had a son and two daughters, and really good family life. Yeah, the whole point was it was very, you know, posh and uppity and like Beverly Hills, but he had a good home life set up, and his kids, maybe a little dim-witted in certain areas, but overall, like, kids who were doing well in their fields and their grades and going off to do things. Yeah, Hillary, his oldest, was a dumbass. Really, was an idiot. But she was going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Carlton was a bit of a weenie. He was going to be fine, though.
Yeah.
Ashley was definitely a little more rebellious and pushing the family's envelope, but she was going to do good things. Mm-hmm. But the thing about what made Uncle Phil the greatest TV dad, I think, and that's why I'm saying Uncle Phil, is because he took Will in and treated him like his own kid in the sense of like, okay, you're under my house, you're in my roof, you obey my laws, but you're mine. You're in my circle now. You're in my protection. I'm going to raise you. And what was really cool about it is because it was a throwaway line in one of the episodes. I forget which season. It was one of the earlier seasons, but it was well known that Philip did not care for any of Vivian's family. He did not like his in-laws. He didn't like his wife's in-laws at all, especially Will Smith's mom, the one of Vivian's sisters. Mm-hmm. He did not like that sister specifically. I remember there was a line in one of the season one or two where he never cared for that in-law. Very specific. He just did not like her, but he still took in her kid. Because that's the thing. Will and Phil were only related to each other through marriage. No blood, but Uncle Phil took him in and turned him into a man the best he could and understood that this kid was different. He couldn't put him in the box that Carlton was in, that there was something different about him, and he did his best and his damnedest, and towards the end of the series, you could see that Will was a man finally, and he was going to be fine due to Philip Banks' guidance. And that's one hell of a TV dad. And I think going further with this conversation we're having about TV dads, it changed. It wasn't about like how our fathers were, and you know, what was it, the Andy Griffin Show, or you know, All in the Family, Sanford and Son, any of those dads from the 60s and 70s and 50s, the Dick Van Dyke Show, those TV dads. It wasn't like, you know, a TV dad is like, yeah, you came out of my balls, you're mine, I'm your father. It was more like, no, you're under my roof. I'm bringing you into my circle. You're going under, I'm choosing to put you under my wing. That's the mostly, yes, we had some actual TV dads who were the actual biological father, but it seems like for us, with what we were growing up with watching on television, it was about a male figure putting you under your wing, under his wing.
Yeah.
That's what made him a TV dad now. It's not about, you came out of me, I got your mom pregnant through my sperm and all that. No, it's, you're under my roof, I'm putting you under my wing, you're mine, I'm raising you.
Is Uncle Phil like your favorite good TV dad?
I think he's the best TV dad of all time.
Okay.
I know there's probably a couple others that, you know, I haven't seen every TV show, obviously, but I think I would say I know the father from the Brady Bunch was a good father. Mm-hmm. You knew that for sure. That was a good father. Yeah. But overall, like, that TV dad is like, that's what a dad is. That's what a that's what a father is. It's about, I have my kids, sure, but I'm putting you under my wing too, that you're not related to me by blood. It's open that I hate your parents, but you're mine, and that I'm taking that responsibility. Because really, what makes you a father, not just, you know, yeah, he came, the child came from you, has half you. It's, you're under my house, so I'm gonna feed you, and I'm gonna clothe you, I'm gonna protect you, I'm gonna teach you, because you're under my house. Therefore, you're my responsibility. So it was more about, it was really more focused TV dads for you and me, Travis, was responsibility, not biological.
Yeah.
And that's why I like it. He's a great TV dad. Well, do you have a TV dad?
I have my favorite, good TV dad. My favorite good TV dad is, the emissary, Space Jesus himself, Captain Benjamin Lafayette Sisko from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
No, I had a feeling it was going to be Star Trek.
On the show, Captain Sisko, you know, he has to run a space station on a rebuilding war-torn planet, but he also has to raise a kid by himself, Jake, played by Cirroc Lofton. There is a tenderness to that relationship, because in the beginning of the series, you find out that his wife was killed in battle, is the big battle with the Borg when Picard was turned into a Borg. That was the backstory. Okay. So he has to raise this son, and son at the start of the series is like 13 or 14, and throughout the 7-year run, we see him grow into a very tall young adult. Okay. What I love about that relationship, and a lot of it was also informed by the actor, but he was the kind of dad that would kiss his son on the forehead openly in front of everyone, and there would be no shame. There was no macho shame about that, because it was like, you're all I got. You're all I got, and I'm all you got. You know, we're here to look out for each other. You know, it's like, you know, the single parent that gets closer to their kid after, you know, the other parent dies, and they just had like a really functional, really sweet relationship that you don't see in a lot of father-son dynamics. And this was partly informed by the actor, because when he got cast in that part, you know, he found out, okay, I'm going to play a single father. Avery Brooks, the actor, he was very determined to take this opportunity to depict a very positive, nurturing depiction of black fatherhood on television, because both these characters were played by African-American actors.
Okay.
You know, and he was, you know, he's a married man and he had kids of his own, but he kind of took Ciroc Lofton under his wing as, like, you know, as his mentor and friend. And he would take Ciroc Lofton with his family for, like, events like basketball games, and then introduce him as, like, oh yeah, he's my other son.
Yeah.
So they really wanted to forge that bond so that it would show on screen. I actually had a professor in film school who worked with him on something, who worked with Avery Brooks on something. He said Avery Brooks is the kind of actor that wouldn't take a role unless, in his own words, he felt like he could rearrange the molecules of the universe. It's like, he was a very serious actor, and that definitely came through on the show. But it wasn't just how he cared for his kid. His sort of nurturing father nature kind of showed up in the more fantastic elements of the show. Not his choice, but he kind of becomes a religious figure to, like, the planet that the space station is kind of helping out. Because he talked to some cosmic aliens in a nearby wormhole, of whom the people on the planet kind of worship as gods. And the show does not take a hard line as to whether these aliens are gods or not gods. It's treated as more of a matter of interpretation. The matter of is there are these extra, the prophets are these extra dimensional aliens that can do a lot of things, give you visions that are convenient to the plot or whatever. And so the Bajorans, these aliens on the planet, they view Captain Sisko, they call him the Emissary, of which, as the show gets on, you kind of see that the Emissary is viewed as like a Messiah-esque figure, which at first Captain Sisko is not comfortable with at all, because he's like, whoa, I just work for Starfleet. I'm supposed to be neutral on these kind of things, but there's nothing I can do about it. Eventually, he kind of takes on that role, or he uses that role when it's, like, necessary for the greater good. Like, hey, we're getting into a bad war with the Dominion. I need Bajor to sign a non-aggression pact so that they could be kept out of the fighting and that kind of thing. And so it's like his nurturing father skills and instincts play into that as well. But just in general, like, the relationship that he had with Jake, as shown on screen, is, like, one of the most, like, precious and emotionally vulnerable father-son relationships I've ever depicted on screen. Definitely worth looking at if we want to talk about, like, masculinity and in fatherhood. Anyway, so that's my favorite TV dad.
That's a good TV dad. Yeah.
I have a whole list of other great TV dads to talk about.
I see. It's another TV dad. I want to save the worst TV dad is. I want to save him for a couple, because I got mine. I just think he sucks. Jesus Christ, he sucks. But you know what? Because you brought it up with Katie Sagal, a bad TV dad that you and I can both talk about is there's two of them on this show. Three, technically, but that's a stepfather. I'm talking about actual. I want to talk about the TV dads. Jax Teller and Tig. They're both really bad.
So we're not talking about Clay.
No, because here's the thing. Clay's a stepfather. He's just evil from the get-go.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, actual, just, like, the dads of the show with their kids.
The literal dads,
like,
okay.
Who are interacting with their kids from birth to, like...
Not
just, like, literal, but, like, because they're interacting with their children from birth on for the rest of the show. Tig and Jax Teller. Now, Tig will go quickly. First of all, the guy is just a bad dude. We all love Tig. But I think people forget that in the first couple episodes of the series, he openly said a quote, a line, and it was a rebuttal line to Gemma of, "This is why I beat hookers." And he meant it too. Like, you know, he was just a piece of shit. We love him because you need a guy like that in that universe, in that world, that universe. But he had two daughters, Dawn and Fawn. And because of his just violent, off-the-trigger nature, got one of them set on fire, and she got burned alive in a garbage dumpster full of dead hacked up bodies, and she was just burned alive in there with them because of Tig, because he was just off the handle.
Yeah,
everything. He was already estranged from his daughters for like years, and he got one of them set on fire. And then the other one was so messed up because of her father, she was into basically S&M shit. Like, hardcore, like, I think it was Fawn was into such hardcore S&M that when you hear her for the first time, our introduction to the character was like, oh God, like, that's rape. They gotta go save her. She's getting raped. She's just into that hardcore crazy shit where she's just bound, gagged, and likes to have rape fantasies because of Tig. It's all because of Tig. He's just a messed up dad.
Yeah, he's like one of those guys that will always say the most messed up. He's like he's the guy in your friend group that will always say the most messed up things imaginable. And you imagine that he was probably touched a lot as a kid.
He actually was. His dad did. His dad did touch him a lot when he was 10. But yeah, no, Tig is a bad TV dad because it led to one of his daughter's death. And then obviously Jax Teller is just a bad TV dad because when he was never around his kids, he just was never there for them.
And he's like your main character that you like, and you think like
you root for Jax.
Root for Jax, and not in like a Walter White kind of way.
Oh no,
like,
it's not at all in like a fuck the man and the establishment way. It's like, oh, that's a knight. Like he's trying to be a knight.
He's a prince.
Yeah.
He's the prince. I mean, you know, to go with the Hamlet metaphor that the show was working with, he's Prince Hamlet.
Yeah.
And but he's also
he's the once and future king as well. He's everything. Like but he's a really a bad dad who was never just around his kids. He showed love and affection. But he just would say goodbye, hi, bye, hi, there, bye.
Okay, hey. I'm going to go kill 20 Mexicans today.
Yeah, or like this, hey, I'm busy. Abel, you're going to be watched by a bunch of prostitutes right now. You're going to be babysat by three prostitutes while I go murder.
Going to get all
drugs.
The crow eaters.
Or the porn stars at Red Woody. Like, that's all it was. Like, and he didn't even know his second son, Thomas, barely. He barely even knew him.
Well, he was in prison when he was born. He didn't find...
But then when he got out, he didn't have any connection with the kid. No. That kid has no only Abel remembers his dad.
Oh, yeah, because of the... Yeah, 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 yeah.
But,
yeah.
Well, okay, spoiler alert. Yeah, well, yeah. Spoiler alert, Jax dies at the end of the 7-season run. But the thing was, Thomas will never have a memory of his father, only Abel. But Abel, what he got from his father was, if there's a problem, violence.
Violence.
To the point where he was to frame Grandma, which, yes, Gemma needed to be framed to get for the truth to be brought into the light. But his point, six-year-old kid planned to get Grandma's secret brought to the light was, I'm going to get a fork and cut myself.
That show is
dark, but Abel, a five-year-old, got a goddamn fork and was cutting himself with it so he could get Grandma arrested.
No, nothing was off limits on that show.
No one was a good dad. Piney was a horrible dad.
Oh, Piney.
He was an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah. Another actor who was on Deep Space Nine. Yeah, he is an alcoholic. Piney, I always thought is just an inherently funny concept of a character because you first see him and he is like the oldest and most frail of the bunch. Because he's got like oxygen tubes going through his nose, and he has to carry a tank with him.
And he's always high on marijuana. And he's always smoking and drinking. But he was basically the sick bear. But he could still kick your ass.
Yes. Or at least he thought he could still kick your ass.
He was a horrible dad who abandoned his, you know, his son and his wife, was cheating on his wife from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible divorce. Messed up Piney. Got Piney into the life.
Yeah.
Hell, even Chibs was a bad dad, too. Got his wife and daughter involved in the IRA. Yeah.
Chibs. I was just thinking, Chibs. Like, did Chibs have any kids?
Chibs had a daughter, and she was always a fugitive on the run because of his ass.
Is there any good parents on that show at all?
Oswald, to a degree. The lumber owner, the lumber tycoon guy.
Oh,
lumberyard tycoon.
Yeah.
Oswald, to a degree, because his daughter, he tried to do the best he could to avenge her rape, but also, too, he just nurtured her and tried to keep her away from it. And also, too, if you think about it, even though every dad would have castrated the rapist themselves, he couldn't do it. He couldn't succumb to that evil because he was that good of a man. So technically, I'd say Oswald.
Okay.
Even though that's apparently, it'd be a hard thing to deal with, you know, the rape of your child.
Yeah.
But the thing is, even though we all would have done it, he couldn't succumb to that kind of evil in castrating the rapist.
Yeah.
So I would say Oswald was a good dad. He was probably one. Hell, even the sheriff, Unser, was a bad dad, too. He had a divorce. Yeah. What was it? What was his wife's name? Was it Precious or Honey?
Did he ever meet his wife?
No, but he said her name.
Okay.
They got a divorce, like, because he was just so involved with his work that he doesn't even know his own kids. Oh, Bobby Elvis had two divorces.
Okay.
Kids from each divorce, and he never saw them.
Yeah.
He would always say, oh, yeah, I sent my alimony. It's in the mail. Motherfucker, did you just say the check's in the mail? He never saw his kids. He just had divorces. He had multiple kids. There's all bad dads in Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah. And then
except for Oswald.
Yeah. Not even John.
Teller was a bad dad, too.
Yeah.
He had three kids with two different women.
And he later effectively took his own life. I mean,
we knew what happened, really. But the thing is, the twist is, he knew what was going on, too. So he did take his own life. But he was such a bad dad that his daughter and son almost had sex with each other because they were half siblings.
And they didn't know
their he kept it so quiet and buried. Hell, even Gemma's dad, who we meet.
He's like all dementia.
He has dementia and stuff. I forget that actor's name. Great actor's been everyone. When you see his face, he's been in everything.
Yeah, you've seen that face before.
He was a bad dad, too, because the wife he married, Gemma's mom, was such an awful woman, he never protected his daughter from her.
No.
So, no, Sons of Anarchy is basically really about bad dads.
Bad dad, just bad parents all across the board. We didn't even mention, like, you know. I mean, Opie's a bad dad just
by is a bad dad.
Opie's a bad dad just by going back to the Suns. Every time I watch the pilot...
He's a bad dad for just not moving out of the city.
No. Yeah. Every time I watch the pilot, I always see Opie, and I'm like, don't go back, Opie. Do not go back to the life. Do not do it, Opie.
Oh,
you won't...
Oh, and
it will do nothing good for you.
And if you read the comics of Sons of Anarchy, most people don't know, the blonde-haired Tacoma guy that Tig is, like, friends with but hates, he's a dad, too.
Mm, yep.
And he's a piece of shit. They're all bad dads.
See, the interesting thing about Jax... Okay, well, one more thing on Jax Teller, because this is what I'm thinking. Like, the interesting thing about Jax Teller, not just as a father, but as a character in general, he's kind of dumb.
Yes.
Like, that's the dirty secret of Sons of Anarchy. And they're like, you actually kind of... It actually improves your view of the show if you watch it this way, knowing that Jax Teller he's well-meaning, but he is not a smart person, and half of his decisions actually just end up digging a bigger hole for himself.
Well, he is white trash. That's the thing.
Yeah.
He's white trash.
Like, in the end of season four, like, you know, he's plotting to, like, get out of... He's gonna get out of the life, right? That's the deal he made with his wife. It's like, I'm gonna get everything in order, make sure that my family is protected, get out of the life, take my wife and kids with me.
We'll go.
And then in the very end, once, like, Clay is out of the picture, he's like, I can't go, man. They're my buddies. I'm gonna leave them to rot and fend for themselves. Nah, man. I gotta take care of my buddies, man.
Bros before hoes.
Yeah. And freaking Tara, she's like,
all right.
I'm a biker's old lady now. And that's another one where I go, Jax, don't do it. Just go. Leave. Jax, don't do this to your family. Don't do this to yourself. Yeah, so that, yeah, it's like he's dumb. He's well-meaning, but dumb. Do not get fooled by his intentions.
That's a good way. You know what? Now I have another reason why to watch Sons of Anarchy for like the 30th time. Yeah. I watch it once a year. All right. Who is your greatest bad TV dad? So we can just get over the bad topic
real
quick.
Bad TV dads.
Like the number one for you, you think it just takes the cake. I like how now it's just mostly about bad dads.
I don't like thinking about bad dads.
By the way, folks, we have good fathers, me and Travis. We have like...
I have a list, and I'd love to go through.
We have role model dads. I hope people know in real life. Me and Travis, actually, our dads are amazing, so...
Yeah, I like my dad. I like your dad.
I like your dad.
God, who are some bad dads?
Do you want to laugh at mine?
What?
Mine's gonna make you
laugh. Your favorite bad dad?
No, I think who is the worst dad of all time.
Okay.
He's my favorite, but he's also the worst dad of all time.
Okay.
Ross from Friends.
Ooh.
He's such a shitty dad.
Yeah.
Oh my god! It's like he gave up after season one with freaking Ben. He tried so hard to be... The whole point of season one, besides getting inside Rachel's pants, was being there for Ben, even though his wife, turned lesbian, who's recently married, is got full custody of the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying his best to be the... Not only just to be a relationship with his son, but to be that male figure as much as he can. He is going at it with all his heart, all his might. You root for him. It's like by the end of season two or three, it's like he's gone. He's not even there. He's just sprinkled in. And I get, like, you know, you can say, well, they're writing, blah, blah, blah. The overall story, like, when you look at it, it's like, you know, Ross, you're a shitty dad.
Yeah.
Like, you're a really shitty dad. Your son is never there in any of your weddings, even the one in Britain, even the one in England. He's never there. He's not even there. It makes it even funnier, too. To show how bad of a dad he is, when Emma's born, the daughter he has with Rachel, Elliot Gould, who plays Ross and Monica's dad, says verbatim, while looking at this newborn baby, he's like, wow, you know, this is so amazing. It's my first grandchild. And there's this awkward pause where Ross looks at him and is like, Dad, you have a grandchild, Ben. Oh, that's right. That's how bad of a dad Ross is, that his own father forgets about him. He forgets he has a grandson and just thinks all I ever have is a granddaughter. And then Emma, when you watch the rest of the series, she's not even there. He's a bad dad. He's like, dude, you were so family-oriented. It's like you forgot about it because Rachel.
I think that's also just kind of a problem with, like, because Friends is about, like, 20, were they in their 20s when that?
Yeah, late 20s.
That was the character.
Mid-late 20s, yeah.
Mid-late 20s. It's like a bunch of 20-somethings going through, you know, life and stuff, man. And I think it's just like having them be parents just complicates all of that.
Isn't that what you want, though, in a sitcom? Like,
well, not if you can't, like...
Write it well?
Do it well. Oh, God, yeah. What are
some... He's a bad dad.
Yeah.
I think Ross Geller is the worst TV dad.
Like a really bad dad, I can once again invoke Star Trek. Actually, there's a few bad dads in Star Trek.
Give me one, because you've given me some good... Give me one.
I'll go with an easy one.
Okay.
Not the worst. He's not the worst bad dad in Star Trek, but Captain Kirk.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
That's right, because even Wrath of Khan shows that more.
Yeah, because
doesn't his son try to kill him in Wrath of Khan? Like, in the meeting? Like, he attacks him, right?
I don't think he attacks him. Yeah, there's a little bit of, like, oh, daddy, why are you in my life? Yeah,
that's
he's a deadbeat dad.
Hey, green alien chicks are just very distracting.
Which, actually, I find the fact that Wrath of Khan introduces the fact that Kirk has a son, and then later he kind of gets his son killed in the third movie. The fact that Kirk... has a son. I thought that was like some kind of a postmodern analysis on the original series, because Kirk had a lot of women that he kissed, because they could only kiss in the 60s.
He kissed him good.
He's a good kisser. So you kind of got the sense that Captain Kirk got around with the ladies. And Wrath of Khan showed that there were consequences of that, and he was not there for David's life growing up. And then, David dies before he really gets a chance to know him, and then Kirk just turns into a bit of a racist.
Did he turn into a genocidal racist?
He didn't turn into, well, he didn't do genocide.
No, like that, in his head.
In his head, yeah, because like in the sixth movie, Undiscovered Country, he's like, I hate the Klingons, I hate all of them, I don't want to help them, they killed my son, I can't forgive them for that. And then someone hacked into his captain's logs when he said that and frames him for assassinating Chancellor Gorkon. Yeah, no, Captain Kirk
That's
is a
good one. I like that.
Captain Kirk's a bad dad.
He just got to put a condom on. It's a condom. Hey, we all hate him. Trust me, I'm Catholic. I hate condoms too, but damn it, dude.
Okay, but like a really bad dad, like the worst dad in all of Star Trek would be Gul Dukat, again, from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, who's kind of the arch nemesis of Captain Sisko. Oh, God, do I even want to... This is like 7 seasons of lore I have to explain with Dukat.
Well, how about this? What was his worst act that he did, if that helps out?
Oh, well...
What is the worst thing he did?
As a person?
As a dad.
As a dad. Okay, so while he was the Imperial Governor of a planet that his empire was enslaving and doing genocidal things with, he impregnated a Bajoran, a woman from this subjugated population that was kind of coerced into being a comfort girl. They don't say rape.
He raped a girl.
But when you think about it, it's rape. And actually, if you think about when you hear him talk about, he says it's like, we were lovers, you realize, oh, this is just, I'm only getting this from you. I'm not getting this from the woman you stuck it in because she's dead now. But he impregnated her and they had a daughter. And the first time this is introduced, this is when he's going on, because he finds out that the ship that his comfort woman and daughter were in, that they found out where that ship crash landed, and he thinks that his daughter might still be alive. His objective is to kill his daughter because it would be embarrassing for his family and his reputation. Eventually, he can't bring himself to do it. And then he's like, fuck it. I'm bringing my daughter back home and I'm going to show that I'm the best dad ever, because for him, it's all about like image and stuff. But really, it's just sort of like, it's more of like a father's pride. Like, look at me. I'm a cool dad and I got my kid right by my side. Look how awesome I am. Aren't I awesome? And that's basically Dukat's personality. He's the guy who's the hero of his own story. No, he's like a horrible, horrible person. You know, he's a space Nazi. That's what he is. He's a space Nazi. And, you know, I mean, that alone should put you in the running for worst dad ever.
Damn, that's a bad dad.
He's a horrible dad. Maybe the best villain character on a television show I've ever seen.
All right, that was good. So now let's get on to the good dads. Let's have some wacky little fun. Because we all have good dads.
All right, I made a list.
Oh, God. All right, you know what? Take over, Travis. Tell me your list.
Okay. And they're grouped by TV shows. So, and the TV shows are listed in alphabetical order. So we'll start out with Battlestar Galactica. And I'm talking about the Sci-Fi Channel reboot. Admiral Adama, he's not only, you know, the father of Lee Adama, a.k.a. Apollo, he's also basically the father of the entire Colonial Fleet. He can be a nurturing father figure, but he's also a hard ass that does not fuck with nonsense very well. Sometimes he makes bad decisions, but not in like a Jax Teller sort of way where he's like an idiot, just sort of like, this makes sense in the context I'm doing what's best for the survival of the fleet as we're looking for a home. Another dad from Battlestar is Hilo, Carl Agathon. He impregnated a Cylon and they had a baby together, but you know what? He stuck by her and he stuck by his kid from the beginning to end. Bob Belcher from Bob's Burgers.
All right, yeah, that's a good dad.
Maybe the best TV dad in any like Fox cartoon sitcom ever.
For sure.
Better than Hank Hill, although Hank Hill is on this list.
Hank Hill grew, but we'll get to that.
Hank Hill grew, but Bob is like...
He is a dad.
He's like a simple man who's always like well-intentioned, good at heart, and definitely the smartest one in his family.
He actually does sit his kids down to talk with them too. Yes. He never talks at them, he talks with them.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, is a good dad. Wow, that's a good one. I forgot all about Bob. Damn, and he's had some funny moments with his kids. Like, honestly, like really genuinely good moments, but like balls to the wall, funny ass shit moments.
Yeah, and but there's also some scenes in that show where he's like really sweet. and kind, and it's like, oh yeah, this is where you remember, like, oh, he's not just a father on paper, like, he really is a father. There's one episode where he and Gene are doing some sort of trapeze act. It's kind of like where your feet are, like, dangling on the pole thing, oh, as okay, you're swinging, yeah, and they're, like, swinging towards each other, and then Gene is having, like, a vertigo moment, and they clasp their arms. Gene will not let go, even though it's the only thing. It's like the thing they need to do in order to get down. And so they're like stuck up there all day. And poor Bob is pleading, is like talking his heart out to try to get through to Gene. You need to let go. No, Dad, I can't let go. I don't want to let go. No, Gene, I'll be right here. I promise you it is going to be okay. It's really funny, but it's also a very like sweet Bob moment.
I do love the Gene and Bob moment. They're all great. All Gene and Bob are great. Yeah, that's a good dad. Bob Belcher.
I love you all, but you are all terrible.
Terrible. You know what's great about, you know, when you talk about Bob, mm-hmm, he's a great dad because he learned what not to do, because his dad was not a good dad.
Yes.
His dad was actually not a good dad. Even though Bob followed his dad's footsteps occupational-wise, mm-hmm, he knew what not to do, and he made sure of that. And he honestly, pretty much so far, because the series is still going, he's doing a hell of a job as a father, because those three kids are just, like, a lot. Not a handful. Yes. They're not a handful. They're not bad. They're not rambunctious. They're just, those three kids are a lot.
He keeps that burger restaurant open.
And you think about this, as a great daddy is, each of his kids has their own room. That's a big thing to say as a father.
Yes.
All three of his children have their own decent-sized rooms.
Despite their money struggles that they have.
And they all share
the
a bathroom.
Yeah.
But each of his kids has one room, and it's, like, crazy when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
How he's able to do that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
From the show Frasier, I put down his dad. I put down Martin, played by John Mahoney. Rest in peace. Oh. Frasier is also technically a father, but we don't see his kid very often because his kid lives with his ex-wife.
But Frasier's dad himself is dead.
But Martin, I think Martin's a good dad. Martin's good at, like, calling out Frasier on his uppity, pretentious bullshit and just kind of bringing everyone down to earth. He's like a seemingly not intellectual person, but he might actually be the smartest one in that entire family. he's great. Coach Eric Taylor from Friday Night Lights. Yeah, also a good dad. Just kind of fits the model of, like, you know, the ideal high school sports coach. Like, he's not like, I'll open my heart to you. No, like, I mean, he'll be kind if you're kind back and you do good back.
Yeah.
But he'll put the foot down. And he doesn't put up with bullshit on his team, even if, like, okay, there's this one episode where one of his players kind of beats up another kid it was just like this one nerd kid was like, come on, man, calm down, it's just a game. You know, he did whatever. Like he just beats him up, like, in a parking lot, and he lies saying, "Well, that kid said racist stuff because it was like a Hispanic kid." Oh, okay. He's like, "That kid said racist stuff about me. Told me I should go back across the river," which is actually something one of his own teammates said, he pinned it on this poor nerd kid, and so now this poor nerd kid has this town reputation for being a racist. The coach is willing to overlook it because he's like, "Hey, you know, we're not gonna let off." But I think eventually his wife kind of talks him into it, like, "Something's not right about this." Yeah. So Coach Taylor looks into it, eventually figures out the student is lying, and he kicks him off the team. He says, "You lied to my face. I can't have someone I can't trust on this team.
Yeah, no,
you gotta go." And this kid is like crying. He's like saying, you know, "This is all I have. I basically have no future because I'm a dumb fuck jock." But Coach Taylor's like, "Tough. You can't be here. Bye." That's a great show. That's a very underrated show.
I know I watched the movie. I gotta watch the show.
Show's great. It's like the best. It's the best high school show ever made. One of these days I'll talk about how sports TV shows are a genre that is not loved as well as it should be. But it's definitely the best of the bunch. I got two for King of the Hill.
Oh, yes. I know who the second one is already.
So I already mentioned Hank.
Hey, what do you think? You wouldn't hurt an unconscious man.
Dale.
So it's Dale and...
Dale and Hank. Dale is a cuckoo head, but...
He's a cuckoo... That's a tame word for fucking Dale. First of all, no, Dale, that's tame to say cuckoo. He's like fucking crazy conspiracy nut who's like an 8-pack-a-day motherfucker who basically sniffs his own pesticide because he's a freaking pest control man. He's an exterminator.
But he is a very loving father. He's a very loving father.
Oh, God. Dale's such a nuthead.
Yeah.
Dale's a great dad, but he's such a nut. His son is like, what, 10 melatonin degrees difference? Yeah. The melanin is like, the melanin's like 10 degrees off, but he still thinks his Native American son belongs to his white ass.
He's not smart enough to figure out that Joseph is not his biological son.
In any way, shape,
but or form. But that does not matter to Dale.
Because he's such a good dad.
And I think if he did find out, it would not matter. I think he loves, he is too loving of a father. He would never disown Joseph. That's his pride and joy.
I don't think he ever smoked around Joseph. I'll go that far. I know I haven't seen the whole show in a long time, but I'll go as far as say I don't think he ever really smoked around Joseph. I know he smoked in the house, but never within like Joseph's proximity, if I remember right. I know that's a long stretch.
I can't say that for sure.
But he's a good dad. No, he's a good dad. He took care of Joseph. He always looked up to him in high praise, no matter what.
I included all the dads from Parenthood.
Yeah.
They're all different qualities, like, and they all parent differently, and they all have their squabbles, but you can't really say any of them, even Crosby, even the, sorry, I'm trying to remember who played Crosby. He's Kristen Bell's husband.
Dax Shepard?
Dax Shepard, thank you.
I was about to say who's Kristen Bell for a second, too, and then I realized who she was. I
forgot. Dax Shepard, yeah. Even the Dax Shepard character, like, in the end, like, he has to grow, but he's a good dad. Almost all the parents on that show are good, even if they need to develop and grow and change.
Well, having a shortcoming doesn't make you a bad dad.
No, they're not evil. They're not abusive. Fred Andrews from Riverdale, Archie's dad. I think he's a good father. And it was very sad when Luke Perry passed away in real life, and they had a really good tribute episode to commemorate Fred's passing. Okay, this is kind of bullshit, but I added another Star Trek character for a good dad. Jonathan Archer from Star Trek Enterprise. Do dog dads count? Because he had a cute little beagle named Porthos.
If dog dads count, I have a TV dad who's not a dad in the show that I'll throw at you, but why not? He took care of his what's the term, fur baby? He took care of
his fur baby. He brought him aboard his dangerous mission of space exploration and got his puppy home okay.
I'll take your dog dad and I'll raise you a military dad who in the show never had kids. I mean, he did later. He's based off a real man.
Mm-hmm.
Later in the show, yes, but during the show, it was a miniseries. No kids. But the entire company, he treated them like his own, and he protected them like a father.
Okay.
And yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am speaking of Dick Winters from Band of Brothers. I had this this conversation with my dad, and he was saying with me, like, that's not a TV dad. I'm like, well, no, Dad, it's different because when you watch that miniseries, it's the way the character Dick Winters, and, you know, in real life, this man is a real person.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way he looked after the company. It's the way he was acting with them. He never yelled at them. He never yelled at them.
No.
Never barked orders. He got stern with a couple of them. Like Garnier, he got stern with him. But he overall was just like, guys, we're together. That's all that matters. Like, this is a company. We're the brothers. We're here together. And he would always pick someone up. He always made sure people were safe. He got so protective of that company that he was even once charged into battle and had to be ordered by his superior officer to send someone, you cannot go in there. And so then he sent the next best person in there, Spears, and that was the best thing for the company. But he really took care of that company like they were his sons, mm-hmm. each and every one of them. From the first episode at a boot camp,
mm-hmm.
all the way till VE Day.
Yeah,
and that's the whole point about TV dads for you and me growing up. It's not about biological stepfather, adoptive father. It's about just putting a male figure putting you under their wing. and treating you like they're your own. That's who Dick Winters was. He was like their dad. He was Easy Company's father. He was always worried about them. He was always making sure the best decisions were there for him. I mean, hell, there's a moment in episode, I think it's 6 or 7, where he's trying to figure out who the next company CEO should be, because he can't be. He's moved up the ranks so much.
Yeah.
He's trying to figure out who the next leader of Easy Company should be, and he was having a hard time. And he just did the best that he, at the time, was a shitty dude. But yeah, no, Dick Winters, that's a TV dad. I mean, hell, you could even say, going further to Principal Building from Saved by the Bell. That's a TV dad, because he was looking after Zach Morris like a hawk, trying to mentor him. Because Zach Morris's dad was just, he sucked. He was just, he was deadbeat, but in rich. He was rich, but deadbeat.
Okay.
But the principal of Bayside, he looked after Zach and was trying to turn him into a man at the best of abilities he could. Even like when there was an episode about like where students got to be teachers for the day, he handpicked Zach Morris to be the principal. Because he believed in him that much.
Okay, I want to throw one more in there. You mentioned, since you mentioned a military show, this is going to be an interesting choice, because this is a dad you never see. But a choice for a good TV dad would be Hawkeye's dad from MASH.
Oh, okay.
Throughout the show, if you've watched MASH enough, throughout the show, Hawkeye Pierce, played by Alan Alda, Hawkeye would write letters to his dad a lot. And his dad, who lives in Crabapple Cove, Maine, he would write. You would hear narration, and the narration would be like his letters to his dad.
Right.
You never meet his dad, because you never see what's going on back home. It's always what's happening in Korea.
Right, during the war and stuff.
And you never meet any of the loved ones back home, despite how they're constantly referenced. But all that you know of Mr. Pierce is just from Hawkeye. But you get the sense that like the reason why Hawkeye, a grown man who's like mature enough to be a captain in the mobile hospital unit, you get the sense that he and his dad are very, very close. And the fact that they write back and forth to each other suggests a very strong bond. It's not, he's not writing to some girl back home. He's writing to his dad. His dad is his connection to the outside world. His dad is the kind of the one thing that keeps maybe Hawkeye from completely losing his mind, although he gets close a few times on the show, including in the final episode. So
it's the presence of his father that keeps him sane. I like that. Yeah. That's a good TV dad.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's good. How about we do a wacky dad just to end this up? Like, not good or bad, but they're wacky.
Okay.
I got a good wacky dad. I just thought of a way to now end this episode, because that's a really good, that's a good TV dad. So I got a wacky one. He's not good. He's not bad. He's just that crazy old coot from King of Queens, Carrie's dad. Do you ever watch King of Queens?
I've never watched King of Queens.
So, he's a good dad.
the Kevin James character?
No. They never have kids. No.
Oh, okay.
His father-in-law.
Okay. All right.
So, the entire fucking series, I shit you not. And by the way, this TV dad is played by Ben Stiller's father. Phenomenal. Not just King of Queens and everything he did. I'm looking up the actor's name right now just to make sure I get it right. But that actor and everything he did, holy crap, he just almost stole the scene, stole the whole thing from everyone. But anyway, that dad, he lived in the basement the whole run of the show of their house. And he was Jerry Stiller. There you go. He played Arthur.
Okay.
This guy was such a menace to the neighborhood. Carrie had to hire a babysitter / personal walker for him. Like someone to just take him out on walks to calm him down.
Oh my God.
He had a personal like babysitter handler / walker. That girl went through hell. But Arthur was just a nutball who was just an overall adorable menace to the whole cast, to the town, to the community. God, Doug went through so much with his father-in-law, And, like, there's no one moment that just says, yeah, that's Arthur. It's every single fucking scene. It's every scene with Arthur where you're just like this. Who the fuck is this guy? And to really encompass it, just think of a man who's still spry. He's no dementia, no medical problems, nothing. He might have a bit of a cholesterol problem. But he had to have his daughter had to hire him a babysitter slash handler slash walker to walk him. And I think the joke was that girl was a dog walker and she got hired to just keep this guy. Like, he needs to get on walks. He needs to calm down. Like, he was just like this little, he was a little shit. He was awesome. He was awesome. Mm-hmm. Only Jerry Stiller could portray this fucking dude. He was such a menace. And he was all, Arthur is the one of the wackiest TV dads because he did have companionship and he did mentor Doug. Mm-hmm. And he loved his daughter, but God, he put that couple through so much. Nothing bad, not hell. He didn't put his couple through hell. But hell was better. Because he was just the wackiest motherfucker. There's no one scene to say about this man, but his over-the-top Shakespearean presence. Literally, he had an over-the-top Shakespearean presence where you're just like, oh my God, this motherfucker's not dead yet. I love that dad. Hell, it's almost like Frank Barone.
Oh.
He wasn't bad. He wasn't good, but God damn it, Frank.
Didn't Everybody Loves Raymond and King of Queens cross over, too?
Yes, but just Doug and Ray.
Okay.
And I think the wives, but never the dads never met, and thank God. Because Arthur was just a wacky menace. Frank was a career...
Where does Frank fit in this conversation?
Frank is more of like the guy who's like this. I'm just glad he's not a part of our family to a degree. Like, he's not horrible, he's not bad, but you know what? I'm glad he's down the street. I'm glad he's down the street and he doesn't like to come out. Mm-hmm. His whole thing was he was a Korean War vet.
Yeah.
I don't even think he got honorable discharge, but he was a discharged Marine who saw combat. Mm-hmm. And that motherfucker was a menace just because of what he would say.
Yes.
Like, he was unfiltered. He was racist, but you loved him. He had no hatred towards people, but he fucking hated everyone. Mm-hmm. And he was like, he would. And the thing is, this man was like 70, I think, in the show. The character was 70, and he would always eat. He was always eating, but never gaining weight. He was always, that was the funniest thing about this old man. He was always eating, never gained weight. One of his catchphrases would be like, Marie, what's for dinner? What's for dinner? What's for lunch? Marie, make me food. Marie, I'm hungry. Marie, I want to eat.
Marie.
Cook me something. Feed me. And like, he was so into food that when his granddaughter, who was the apple of his eye, was his granddaughter.
Yeah.
Started cooking, and she made grilled cheese, just grilled cheeses. He literally said to his wife after taking a bite of this grilled cheese, you can retire now. Like, she's gonna, I don't need you anymore, basically. Yeah. My granddaughter's cooking for me. Said that right to his wife.
Yeah.
And he was serious. The dude was a smart ass, but you couldn't tell. He was seriously saying to his wife, you don't need to cook anymore. I got her. Like, he would just pop off and like,
who is worse? Him or his wife?
His wife.
His
wife was based. Okay, since we're talking about his mom, and we'll get that into our next episode, people, of TV moms. God, Marie was basically the greatest antagonist of all of TV history. But Frank was the glue of that family.
Yeah.
Even though he always yelled at his sons, even though he would always throw his weight around, he defended his daughter-in-law against the wrath of his wife, and he loved his granddaughter and supported her cooking habits. He even supported her so much that in that same episode, when he felt that his son and his daughter-in-law were taking too much advantage of his granddaughter by not giving her allowance, he was writing her up a contract to make sure he got charged. No, swear to God. He became his granddaughter's union rep against his own son. And was basically getting her $20 an hour. Not $20 a week. This is the 90s. He wanted his son to pay his granddaughter $20 an hour for all the babysitting, laundry, cleaning, and cooking she was doing. And I'm like, this, dude, she's 10. Like, and she was
some good life skills there.
He was playing hardball as a union rep. He told her at one point, literally, just walk away from the table. She's like, what does that mean? Just go somewhere else. Grandpa, where do I go? Just get out of here. I'm trying to help you out. I'm going to get you money. It was awesome. Oh, my God. He would make fun of his son's stupidity, their height. He would... he one time got moved into a retirement home, and he stole one of the golf carts and was honestly trying to run over the help of that facility.
Oh, no.
No, no, no. But to him, it was a game, and he would shout out saying, hit the monkey, get a cookie. Hit the monkey, get a cookie. And he would try to run over the staff as a game.
Oh, no.
He never did it. But, God, Frank Verone was just... I feel bad for everyone who had to deal with him, but at the same time, you wanted him. He was great. Yeah, he was... one of his favorite parts, too, because him and Marie would constantly fight. He once said to his son, look at me! I used to be a gentleman! She made me this way!
I think I remember that episode.
Because they were menaces. They were both... Arthur and Frank were a menace to the community, but she loved them. Frank would honestly... He would just walk into his son's house and sit on the recliner chair. Because the whole point, remember, the whole point of the 90s and early 2000s was that the lazy boy was where dad sat. That's the king's throne. Nope. Walk in, not even say hi. He would walk in, unbutton his belt. He'd already have a chicken wing in his fucking mouth, and just unbuckle his pants, undo his zipper, sit on the TV, eat a chicken wing, and watch TV on his son's chair and television. And just that's all he did. He didn't even say hi. Just came in, just sat down, boom.
I remember there was an episode where he pretended to, pop his knee or something.
Oh, yeah!
Because I guess it was so I guess he didn't want to go on a trip with his wife. So he stays with Robert, Brad Garrett, I actually got to see in person once. He's a very, very tall man. That guy is ginormous. Robert eventually catches Frank, moving about just fine. And then Frank is like, so what of it? I didn't want to go. And I guess he starts dancing for joy that he doesn't have to be around his wife. And then he pops his kneecap. And I just remember Robert says to him in that deep, Brad Garrett voice, you just had to dance.
He once set up a nice date day with him and Maria, and it was on a canoe, and they were gonna go down the river. Mm-hmm. He just puts her in the canoe and just pushes it. he stands there, hands on his pocket, hands in his pocket, proud of himself. He just pushed her down the river. Oh yeah, he was, but you loved him. He was a lovable bastard. That's the thing about Frank. What was it, when Deborah learned how to cook this amazing Italian dish, right to Marie's face, you should ask Deborah. You should ask Deborah for help on how to cook it.
Oh,
ask Deborah.
Yes.
Deborah can help you cook this. You should ask her. Just right to her face. He just gave Marie so much shit. He gave Marie more shit than Archie Bunker to Edith.
Oh, well, Edith was a sweetheart.
No, but I'm just saying, but he gave Marie a lot of shit, too, though, at the same time. There was once Marie was telling Deborah a beauty tip, a woman should add an inch of clothing on her every year she gets older as for modesty as a woman. You know, you don't need to dress a certain way after a certain age. And then Frank just says, then you should have an Egyptian robe on you right now, shouldn't you? And she just looked at him like, motherfucker. One of his catchphrases I love, holy crap. he was...
I'm sorry, that shouldn't be as funny as it was, but you said it just right. Because that's how he would have said it, yeah.
Holy
I can hear it in
Peter
my
Boyle
head.
Is a great actor.
I haven't seen that show in years, but
Peter
yeah.
Boyle is one of the greatest TV dads grandfathers ever. Holy crap. When a beautiful woman came in, dude stood up fast. Dude got out of that chair fast when there was a cute girl around. Ray was thought of as having an affair. He was like, "What did I always tell you? If you're having problems with your lady, you don't go out and get another woman. That's just two problems now." That just showed you also too what I loved about Frank, because my grandfather being a Marine, mm-hmm. I'm named after him. Yeah, no, the Marines, dude, you just love them.
Yeah.
Old school Marine dogs. Oh, man. He fought Korea. He stacked bodies like sandbags, and his worst enemy was his wife.
Yeah, he was like a more human version of Cotton Hill.
Oh, yeah, Cotton Hank Hill's dad.
Yeah.
I kill Fitty Man. The war never ended for Cotton, but for Frank, he was just like this, I'll start it up again.
Remember when Frank entered another war, it was at home.
Frank started a war with the produce guy. Remember that episode?
No, I don't remember that.
So Frank was with his granddaughter, and I think Marie Deborah, out shopping, and he's just hanging around. Like I said, his granddaughter was the apple to his eye.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, it's not around much anymore, but grocery stores in the 90s and early 2000s, some still have it, but not a lot, had basically like those candy dispensers where you got a tong, mm-hmm. opened up the jar, picked out your candy, and you paid by the pound when you got there, and you can mix and match it, whatever. He just opened up, took a few, and started eating, and the produce guy said, "Hey, dude, those aren't samples. Excuse me, fat fuck?" Like, almost like, he might as well have said that. He might as well have said, but he's like, excuse me, tubby? He's like, "Those aren't samples, you gotta pay for it." "I'm just taking a couple. It's not that much." Yeah, if everyone took a couple, blah, blah, blah. I was like, "Fine." And you know what he did to him? "Fine. Here's a quarter." And he flicked it at the dude.
Wow.
And then he got into a shouting match with the guy, and his granddaughter was there. And that was the whole thing of the episode. And he was trying to be like, "But I wasn't wrong." And it's like, "No, Grandpa, you were wrong, because you did steal and you yelled at a man in public." And he's like, "Damn it, fine." So he goes, this is the best part. He goes to actually do a heartfelt apology. The first time in the entire series run, Frank shows empathy and human emotion, and the produce guy lets him justifiably have it.
Oh,
and you see what Frank does? He's like, "Fine, all right." Takes his granddaughter's hand, walks away. The pyramid of apples, takes the bottom one, knocks it off.
Oh,
whole thing comes down. And no. I'm talking like 100.
Oh, no.
And he doesn't look back, because that's Frank Barone. It's Peter Boyle. Only he could have. Peter Boyle's the only one who could have portrayed that man.
He was in a really great episode of The X-Files, and all the time I kept watching it, it's like, yeah, he's the only one that can play this part, but he had that, I think this aired right before Everybody Loves Raymond premiered, but he had that, just, Peter Boyle had that Frank Barone-ness about him.
Just the look, his hair, everything.
This like inherent, like, cynical sarcasm about him. Which worked really well in that X-Files episode.
And, you know what's nice, since you brought that up, just to finish up quickly with Wacky Dads, because there's really just two.
Mm-hmm.
He opened up to his sons at one point in one episode about how his dad would beat him daily.
Mm-hmm.
Just for breathing, just for saying good morning, just for saying hi. His dad a couple times like knocked him out. And he said he felt bad because he could never bring himself up to doing that to his own sons, and he felt kind of like a failure as a father for that aspect, that he couldn't discipline his sons physically. Ooh. So all he did was yell at his sons. He yelled at his sons all the time. But then Robert said, "No, because it's just because he didn't want to be him, Dad." And that's when the brother Ray and Robert realized, yeah, no, our dad was a hard ass, yelled at us a lot, mm-hmm. kind of a dick, but he never touched us.
Yeah.
And that's why Frank was awesome, because he subconsciously chose just not to be his father. And that's what's cool about Frank.
Yeah.
Even though he's a dick and almost ran over people.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my thing.
I think we'll end it there. I did not imagine we'd talk so much about Everybody Loves Raymond.
I know, it's a good show. It holds up to this mm-hmm. day. There's a lot of great shows from the 90s that hold up to this day that everyone should watch. It's on IFC and TV Land.
And I think CBS owns the rights to that show, so it's probably on Paramount Plus.
But there's a lot of great TV dads, but it's our TV dads, basically. It was about ownership and responsibility, mm-hmm. not biologicalness. It was just being a mentor and taking someone under your wing voluntarily, irregardless if they came from you or not.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a good TV dad. And that's why TV dads are different nowadays. We have bad guys who are great dads in TV shows. Yeah. We have deadbeat dads who are rich and like should do it well. Mm-hmm. You have weak dads, like even like a Jerry from Rick and Morty. Like, I'm just saying, like, it's like yeah. TV dads have changed so much where it's not about the all-American standard golden boy of, like, you see something, this is what you do. Like, the dad from To Kill a Mockingbird, like, that standard.
Yeah.
It's not that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just you either do the job, because it is, it's a job. Being a dad is tough. You either do the task or just get the fuck out. Leave. You'd be better if you leave or you put your feet in the mud. That's what it is, and that's why we have a lot of bad dads in TV right now, and a lot of good dads, and some wacky motherfuckers.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll end it there. You know what we forgot to do with the last one? What are you watching and reading right now?
Oh, what? Yeah, we kind of ended on a very squirrely note with episode 3. let's see. What am I watching right now? Oh, okay. I'm going to say it one more time because I know you haven't watched it yet. Ladies and gentlemen, on Amazon Prime, there's this new TV show from South Korea called Newtopia. It is amazing. Episode 4 is not even out yet during this time of recording. It'll be out soon. 3 episodes right now, hour each, live action, South Korean drama. No, my apologies. South Korean rom-com set during the backdrop of the zombie apocalypse. And the zombie apocalypse is played pretty much straight. Ladies and gentlemen, you're watching the fall of South Korea.
Yeah.
And guess what? It is a rom-com in these people's universe and is downright balls-to-the-wall hilarious. I laughed so hard at one point, I almost dropped my youngest kid. My 9-month-old. Okay. I almost dropped my 9-month-old kid while I was laughing so hard.
Right.
I know the subtitles are not everyone's thing. I highly recommend you go to the original South Korean audio, put on those English subtitles or whatever other titles you read in, and just laugh your dick off. What are you reading or watching, Jeff?
Well, also on Amazon Prime, Invincible is back.
It is, right?
It is.
Season 3?
Yeah.
Damn.
Right now, episode 5 is set to drop tomorrow, although by the time this comes out, this will, like, episode 7.
And how's the show going so far?
It's great. It's still really good.
For new fans and old, like, comic, it's based off a comic, right?
It's based on a comic, and you can look right behind me. I have, like, I have a bookshelf right behind me, and I have all 25 trade paperback volumes of Invincible. I liked it before Amazon made it cool.
So fans of the comics and new fans, just this is great across the
board. Yeah. It's amazing how faithful that, because I've been rereading the comics as I've been watching the show. It's amazing how faithful it is to the original books. And yet anything that does get changed, I feel more often than not, they're like good changes. They're like, oh, I actually like how this was done better, or I like how this character is written better than in the book. Invincible. It won't take long to catch up. They only put out 8 episode seasons, but it's a fantastic show. Okay. Definitely a breath of fresh air in the dwindling, yet oversaturated superhero market. Both the show and the comics are absolutely worth it. Check it out.
All right, good. And that wraps us up for today, folks. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. It means a lot to everyone listening here. We're really having a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah. And thank you for everyone who listened this far, because I think this is our longest episode yet.
Yeah, you guys did the marathon.
I hope you had a really long commute.
I know, yeah, really. I hope traffic was gridlock.
I hope you go to work in Los Angeles.
Well, that's it from us here at Give Us the Launch Codes. I'm Tom.
I'm Travis.
And good afternoon, good evening, and good night to you all. We love you.
Bye.